Hey, you are sleeping. Come on.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Greetings.
And, well, the champagne's all been popped now, hasn't it? And Leicester are champions.
They are.
Yes, indeed.
Well done, Leicester.
It's been amazing. It's been an amazing week, isn't it?
Really? It has.
Obviously, they were crowned champions without actually kicking a ball, weren't they?
Well, I think that's the best way to win a title.
It is a great way to win one.
That's my kind of success.
On the sofa.
I was really pleased that I actually found the bit of video of Leeds winning the title in 92. John Helm around Lee Chapman's house.
That's right.
I bet that was already messy, was it?
they played in the morning. And so they were like fresh out the shower and sat down at Lee Chapman's house and John Helm was passing around
Eric Cantona was there, wasn't he?
Eric Cantona was on the sofa, as was Dave Batty and Gary McAllister.
Dave Batty desperately trying to look like he gave a shit.
Yeah.
Notoriously not interested in football.
All four of them were on one sofa. It looked a bit cramped.
Did they have the sequence where Elson Wellesby said to Eric Cantona, "Magnifique," and Eric went, "You speak French?" And there was this pregnant girl. Elton goes, "No."
They had won it because Liverpool beat Man United. I think that's what.
Yes.
It was.
Yes. And Ian Rush scored.
Yes.
And it was the first time Ian Rush had ever scored against Manchester United, and it was a long-standing football trope: Ian Rush never scoring against Manchester United. And he finally scored. It was 2-1, wasn't it? And he opened the scoring.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain.
So yeah, that's.
I know Ian Rush scored the goal.
That's an astounding way to win a title. Well, and Leicester's, and the way Leicester won it. Well, I mean, the game on Monday night was just amazing, wasn't it?
It was carnage.
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant.
That's the best game of football since that Holland-Portugal game in the 2006 World Cup.
And it should have had as many sending off.
You should have done that. The referees obviously thought, I am not sending anyone off in this game.
Yeah.
There's too much riding on it.
Klattenberg obviously had a bet on no reds. Totally.
They certainly tested his metal, didn't they?
Yeah.
You want to send people off?
More yellow cards for one team than any other Premier League match.
Well, I mean, you know, fair play to them. If you're going to go down fighting.
Yeah, and quite literally.
And go down fighting Chelsea. Why not?
I must say, it looked for everything like an Arsenal-Chelsea game. It really did. It had that whole sort of, just think about it, the fact they just got under the skins of Tottenham, and Tottenham were just dishing it all out.
They were
trying to outsnide Chelsea, which for the first half worked really well. They were working out
their issues, weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, because they must have known that the likelihood is that even if they win, they're still not going to win the title.
Yeah, yeah.
So they must have just thought, anyway.
But they did hold it together quite well. But then when it got to kind of 20 minutes to go, I mean, there were a few tackles going in before that, but the realisation was that we're not going to do this, they're not going to let us in.
Yeah.
Let's just start kicking everyone. Pushing over 69-year-old men.
I know. I know. It was funny because Danny Rose afterwards was, sort of like, it was effectively saying, I feel like a bloody idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel like a fool. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing you probably look at and go, oh my goodness, is that me? Yeah.
Do you remember that time when you pushed over that pensioner? Because you were angry because you had a bad day at work.
Yeah, it was a bit of a spectacle. But I didn't expect there to be another great match on the next day, though, in the Champions League.
Oh, no, that was a brilliant game, wasn't it?
The Bayern game.
It was almost like the same game. They just changed kits and just went back at each other.
Yeah.
This is why we play football. And that's why when Wednesday rolled around, I thought, Real Man City, there you go.
Yeah,
this is going to be like Game of Thrones, isn't it?
It's going to be carnage. I let my son stay up to watch the first 15 minutes of that, and he asked to go to bed.
Excellent. Like company.
Yeah, a bit like, yeah.
Oh dear. Yes. Well, there you go. Well, that was the excitement for this week. But we couldn't really expect to have three games in a row like that, could we? Really?
No, so, no. It's too much to ask.
Too much to ask for. But hey, we got two cracking matches this week, excellent. And of course, Leicester are now champions.
They are.
And we often shy away from the big stories on this pod, but we certainly can't shy away from this one, can we? So we are going to be quite Leicester centric on this one, and I think it's well deserved. Congratulations, Leicester.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Mm. Very good.
You posited a question earlier.
Mm.
What do other clubs have to learn from what Leicester have done this season?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's got to be something that they have done. I mean, it is something of a miracle, but at the same time, it is a well-resourced club with well-paid, very athletic, very professional football players.
Mm.
So it's not a kind of... It's not a rags-to-riches story. It's not like a cup upset. You know, so these guys have fought an entire league campaign and they've come out easily the best team.
Yeah.
From really a year ago, or just over a year ago, being, you know, actually easily the worst team.
Yeah.
So there's got to be things that they did, incremental things that they did to improve in such a short space of time that even the biggest clubs, certainly medium-sized and smaller clubs, can look at to try and, if not actually emulate Leicester to the point where they win the title, but certainly push themselves up the table by a significant margin and improve their prospects perhaps of qualifying for the Europa League or even possibly the Champions League, and providing genuine competition for the top four, five, six genuinely rich, well-heeled, big squadded clubs like, you know, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man U, City, etc.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, because I think what you've seen over the last couple of seasons is Southampton challenging.
Not
challenging really for that you think, well, they're going to end up in the Champions League big spot, but certainly causing upsets, beating big sides, and being a comfortable top half of the table team.
Yeah. Mm.
Even with a massive turnover of players.
Yeah.
This season as well, you've seen West Ham really mix it up with the teams in the top half of the table.
That'd be the story of the season if it wasn't for Leicester, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely would have been. I suppose a lot of the discussion about Leicester's triumph is not focused on Leicester themselves, but on the other teams, on the so-called big teams.
Yes.
And their failure to actually challenge for the title. But I do think that really does miss the point and really does miss what Leicester have actually achieved. Leicester so far, they've played 36 games and they've only lost three times.
Yeah.
Now, Ferguson, in all these years in the Premier League, never lost less than three games in a season.
Wow.
So that really shows you what Leicester have done.
Yeah.
It is amazing, really.
Yeah, it's not like it's a lower than average points total, is it?
No, it is slightly lower, but not greatly lower. They can still finish with 83 points, which is perfectly respectable for teams wanting to win the title.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily that the points have been spread about a little bit more and then they have gained from that, profited from that. They really have been that good.
Yeah.
It is extraordinary.
Yeah.
So what is it? What's behind it? I mean, I guess we probably have to go back to... Because, I mean, this started with Nigel Pearson, didn't it?
It did, really.
At the end of that. So, yeah. I mean...
They're still on that run, really, aren't they?
And they haven't stopped.
What they've got now is they've got consistency. And they've got 4-4-2.
Yes.
I mean, he was playing three at the back. I think he was playing four at the back for a while, but he went to playing three at the back, I think, when he was getting at the end of his tenure. But
well, that in itself is just... I say it's a bit of a throwback, but I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that 4-4-2 was making a bit of a comeback.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's been some coaches in Germany that have been going with 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1. Mm. And I mean, it's kind of good to see.
Yeah. I think the difference is how it's deployed. They sit incredibly deep, and I think of all of the teams, certainly in the Premier League, they've had more crosses thrown in against them than anybody else, because Huth and Morgan refuse to be drawn out of position.
Mm.
If they lose a ball out to the wing, then they go, OK, well, we're defending across now.
Yeah.
And I suppose that brings players or teams onto them, and they feel a bit more buoyed, and they feel more like, you know, we're going to get these guys in a minute, we're getting loads of crosses in, the chance is going to come. And that's when Leicester catch them, because then they've got some very, very quick-footed players, incredibly well-drilled, very, very fit and incredibly fast players who can break, and they break en masse, and they've scored more goals and created more chances on the counter-attack than anybody else.
Mm. Yeah.
I think than anybody else in any of the top divisions in Europe as well.
Right, right.
So they've taken counter-attacking and just gone, well, this is how we're going to play it.
Yeah.
And when you're that well organised and you're that fit, and the communication's there, it's very hard to defend against. And I think that's a key. That's one of the keys to their success.
Exactly. What you've got, you mentioned Morgan and Huth there, and they've been getting a lot of the focus about what a great centre-back pairing they've been and how they haven't been drawn out of position.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that praise goes to the guys either side of them.
Yes.
Simpson and Fuchs, because they've been not hanging back, but they have remained deep. They've remained traditional, old-school fullbacks.
Mm.
Not that we've seen really in sort of like, well, 10, 15 years, especially amongst the elite teams who like to throw forward. They've shaped up more like a Mourinho-Chelsea side a first time round, where you've got a very, very regimented back four, and you know, it makes it very easy for the centre halves to stay in position when they're not having to be spread around. You notice this a lot at City and at Arsenal, especially Arsenal, where you've got Mertesacker who's always being drawn out
to cover
a fullback who's 40 yards up the pitch.
And you've got your wingers or your flank players.
Yeah.
If they exist at all, they're unable to cover. In a lot of cases, I mean, they don't have traditional wingers who can maybe swap.
No.
And just take over.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems that at times, you know, you've got teams going fullback winger, and then you've got two strikers. You've got a kind of front six almost.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
and that's a lot to expect.
Yeah.
You know, wing backs to be going forward and to come back and defend.
Yeah, well,
for
exactly.
90 minutes when you're getting pulled.
Yeah. Tottenham have managed to do it this season with Walker and Rose.
Yes,
but they're
outstanding players.
Yeah, they're outstanding players, but they've been at their limit, and they must be knackered by now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the cracks are beginning to show on there as well. It's like when you see the performance they put in against Chelsea. You can see what that's actually done to them to be that sort of like the intensity that they've had to put in to achieve that.
It's funny that Christian Fuchs is obviously quite a well-known player in Germany, because he was at Schalke for quite a while.
Right.
And Schalke sort of fancied themselves as being title challengers, and so there's a, you know, everyone kind of appreciated the irony that although he was moving to the Premier League, I think a lot of people felt that when Fuchs was going to Leicester, it was more of an admission that he wasn't going to be able to sort of like win the title. And then, of course, in his first season, he does that. And, of course, it's a victory for nominative determinism. so it was written in the stars, definitely. But, yeah, I mean, you're right about the fullbacks. Very, very well-disciplined fullbacks. So a traditional style of play, or progressive but just traditional in appearance?
I think I think traditional in appearance, but progressive because of the, well, it's not progressive in that they're organised. I was going to say they're organised. You know, there's nothing progressive in being organised. It's just, it really, really helps. But I think set up in front of them with Kante and Drinkwater, two defensive midfielders there who work incredibly, incredibly hard. And there's a theme coming through this, which we'll see when we talk about the other players as well, is work rate with these guys is just off the scale. Mm. So their fitness levels must be incredibly, incredibly high. And, you know, when you were talking about the Tottenham example there, and players being knackered, I mean, I'm sure these guys are pretty tired, but, you know, Leicester haven't lost many players to injury at all. In fact, they've lost fewer than anybody else in the league. So they're doing something right with how they condition these guys.
Well, I think it's not only about the fact that they're well conditioned, but when you see them, they are putting a lot of work in.
Mm.
But as I said in the previous example, Walker and Rose have been bombing up and down those wings all season because they've had to do that to keep defensively sound. With these guys, they're putting the effort in, but all their effort is worth something. It's not, there's no wasted effort on this side. It's ruthlessly efficient, which is paying dividends for them.
I think
they've had more shots than anyone else, I think, or they've got the highest shots to goal rate ratio, which is amazing, because I was thinking, well, they've just been really lucky on their with their goals. They've scored some great goals this season, but it's not. They keep making goal scoring chances.
They do.
It just keeps on going and keeps on going. And I said earlier on in the season when not long after Arsenal beat them, they beat them 5-2. I said that if anyone was going to go there, you had to outscore them because there's no way you're going to defend against them because they'll just keep on coming at you.
Yeah.
It's like just they will score, and I think they have failed to score on a few occasions, but it's not been that many.
Mm. Yeah, and
they cede a lot of possession as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean the
standard. It's very Italian style, that, isn't
it? Well, I mean, but again, against looking at the top teams in all of the top divisions in Europe, they are. I mean, their possession levels are well below. It's like 45%.
Mm. Their pass rates are low as well.
Apart from Bayern Munich, but that's Guardiola, and his style is his high possession, very very high possession, and lots of chances from there.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
but 45% is that's very low.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, the best proponent of that of modern example beyond Leicester, is Simeone's Atletico.
Yes, yes.
Who deliberately don't play with the ball, and you know, are happy to allow the opposition to play and then just pick them off on the break. You know, crudely with some absolutely top class forwards.
Yeah,
much like Leicester. I'm sure that there's nuance in that, and it's not exactly the same, but. Mm. I mean, it is a very effective way of winning football matches. I don't consider it to be negative at all. I think it's a great way to play football, and it's a great way to win football matches.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you think of the teams that employ the long ball tactic, like Sunderland, for example, or West Brom, or Stoke to an extent, where they defend deep. And they play without the ball, and then it's just a long ball up, and then they kind of all pile up and see what they can do. I mean, this is a lot more graceful and a lot more planned than that. Mm. So I think you'll be wrong to say it was. I agree with you. It's wrong to say that it's not attractive. It's very very exciting because the pace that they move at.
Only West Brom do actually do more long balls than Leicester do. But I think when you've got players of pace. Then why not use it? Why not put it into the channels and use them? They've utilised it very, very, very well.
Mm.
I suppose really the people who are getting a lot of the plaudits are Mahrez, who's had an amazing season, obviously Vardy, and Kante as well. Kante's got a lot of interest, a defensive midfielder who can play the ball that always gets interest.
Yeah, for what, just over £500,000
in transfer fees. And he's getting a lot of comparisons with another Ranieri signing from over 20 years ago, which of Claude Makélélé.
Oh, right. Old Kante in the Makélélé role.
Yeah.
Is it the Kante role now?
Well, I suppose it's an easy comparison to make, the defensive midfielders who both signed by Ranieri and both turning into or being seen as the engine of a side.
Yeah.
Kante was actually signed by, I can't remember his name, but he was signed by the club's executive sporting director. Yeah. Most of these signings obviously were, I mean, Ranieri came in relatively late and didn't actually, I mean, he sanctioned the signing, but apparently it took a bit of persuading, but I mean, it wasn't necessarily something that Ranieri conceived himself, a sign that he conceived himself. But I mean, another player that I would quite like to highlight, of course, is a player that I'm quite familiar with from Mainz, and that's Shinji Okazaki, who has also been brilliant, or perhaps in a more understated way. I think, if I'm right, he kind of plays slightly off Vardy, doesn't he?
Yes. Mm.
But I mean, I think he's very good at ball distribution and has been extremely helpful. And has scored some pretty amazing goals as well.
And there's another player with a high work rate. I mean, he tracks back a lot as well. I think actually he's been substituted more than any other player, certainly in this team anyway.
Right.
Because, you know, he gets the end of the game.
Yeah.
He's ran across the pitch at high speed.
Yeah.
A lot. He's a brilliant player.
Yes. Yeah, he's their most expensive signing of the summer.
How much did they pay for him?
It was 5.75, I want to say.
Which in this world really,
That's the most money that they spent. David Kohn was on Twitter saying that inferring that perhaps we shouldn't be getting so excited about them because they'd spent something in the region of £100 million.
Mm.
I'm assuming that he means over, the last two or three seasons, because looking at Transfermarkt statistics, that's not how much they've spent at all.
Maybe how much they've committed in contracts as well.
Maybe so. So, I mean, it's not... Going back to what I'm saying earlier, it's not a fairy tale insofar as this is a poor club. But they're not a big club. They are a relatively, you know, a medium-sized club, a small club in Premier League standards.
Mm.
And although they have spent a great deal of money, they would appear to have spent it extremely wisely.
Yeah.
And by comparison to other football clubs,
mm.
you know, it's I would say small beer.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. But I think there's probably more to it than just the players they've brought in. Of course, that's very, very important. But they are the execution of a plan, effectively. You know, they are executing the plan. You know, Pearson put together a really good back office team, if you like, which the owners insisted stayed in place when Ranieri came along. So they had you know, fitness coaches and sports psychologists and sports scientists and all the other things that all clubs have got. And don't get me wrong, but I think the difference, as I understand it, is that Ranieri was pleased or was happy to listen to them and to take their direction. So it wasn't like I'm the boss, I know best. He was listening to experts and acting on that.
So the big takeaway, I guess, for other clubs would be to, you know, hire good staff, well-resourced staff, to work on conditioning and fitness and listen to them or direct your coach to listen to them.
Yeah.
Mm.
When, since you're paying them all this money. Maybe that's something that other clubs don't do.
So what can Palace learn from this, do you reckon?
Hit Wickham. Hit Wickham. Defend deep and hit Wickham.
Just get it up.
And then sign a good understudy for Wickham's inevitable suspension / injuries.
Mm.
Or, you know, long weekends in, you know, I don't know, Thailand or something like that, or whatever, you know, casting aspersions there. But, I mean, my impression of Wickham is that he gets a bit feisty. But whatever you do is upgrade your medical staff.
Yes.
Yep, definitely. And upgrade your conditioning staff. Also, sort out your scouting network is what I would also say. Because, I mean, the players that they signed are clearly very, very good players.
Yep.
And not so much, well, and to an extent under the radar. I mean, certainly in Kante's case. I mean, Okazaki was a well-known player at Mainz, and I think that no one is surprised that he moved, say, to the Premier League. But they may have been surprised that he'd gone to somewhere like Leicester. They might have thought that maybe he would have gone to a more established club. Mm. These are shrewd signings.
Yep.
They don't require, you know, a massive scouting network, but, you know, they do require a degree of nous that perhaps... So Leicester signed Kante, Palace signed Kabaye.
Yeah.
Right, and so I think that that illustrates perhaps the gap between the two. So Pardew has gone for a player that he'd signed previously at Newcastle, and Leicester have gone for a guy who's obviously they've had scouted and feel is going for an absolute song, is going to be a great signing from a great player for them. And that's because they put the hours in and the working in. And I would say that that's what a club like Palace and other clubs like that would need to do. I also think that they should play non-possession football. They should defend deep, hit hard, get the ball quickly, particularly because we've got Wickham. And I think Wickham is capable of being one of the best strikers in the Premier League.
Mm.
He's a phenomenal gift. I mean, such a... Well, you know.
He's a beast.
Yeah.
He's a very, very strong, big, strong lad.
He can trap the ball. He can take the ball down. I mean, he doesn't... I mean, there was that one time during the semi-final where he... But, I mean, mental lapses aside, and again, this is the other thing as well. It's all down about commissioning, conditioning and fitness and maintaining you know, mental sharpness through fitness. And these are all things that they could probably get from Leicester.
Hmm. I think what's important as well is when you're going back to what you were saying about scouting, is by the player for the position, not the player for the name.
Well, I think that's half the problem, isn't it? Because I think, for instance, with Kabaye, that was a purchase because... he could get him.
Yeah.
Whether or not he could fit him in the side, we ended up really building the team around him in the first half of the season.
He did,
really.
Yeah.
So, but that, of course, causes imbalances everywhere else. Yeah. And then when you get injured, then you've got...
fell apart.
Yeah. And we could say, well, you know, Leicester have been lucky with injuries. And yes, they have. And yes, they haven't played midweek. So, you know, they've only played, 41 games this season.
Yeah.
Compared to Liverpool, who are currently playing their 59th game of the season.
Yeah, that's going to help.
Yeah, so that's an extra half a season they're playing there. But they've obviously gone out with the system, and they've been able to play their players in it week in, week out. And as you say, just buying players, because I think, actually, I need a guy who can do this, and this. Mm. Not thinking, actually, this guy's really good. I mean, I've seen him play before. He's got great Premier League record. Yeah, great. Put him in.
Let's bring him
in. We'll have to like shift everything around. But we'll
make it work.
Yeah.
Or who's the biggest name I can get in this position?
Yeah.
So you're more buying based on someone's reputation rather than their ability.
Yeah.
And then you haven't got any. I mean, I'm not saying there are no egos in that team, but they're not massively obvious. And they seem to be able to play it as a team because there's no one there going, well, I'm the superstar.
Yeah.
Maybe you know, Vardy. maybe Vardy and Mahrez's success. Maybe you know that's something they're going to have to deal with. Mm.
Yeah. Well, to what extent that squad's going to get picked clean up, we don't know. Over the summer, we'll find out who moves on, if anyone moves on. But that's a discussion.
Yeah. They're going to have to go somewhere with Champions League football.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
The thing is, the Premier League money that there is now, I mean, is just far beyond, you know, all the other major leagues. It would have to be another Premier League club really to afford these guys' wages.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that the ones that are on slightly more modest contracts will be renegotiating over the summer.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're on massive bonuses. They've got the prospect of Champions League football. Or maybe there are no bonuses because it's like, well, we're not going to write a championship clause into your contract, your money.
I can just imagine that like everyone's looking at whenever their contract's coming up for negotiation at whatever club you are at now. Let's get a bonus in there in case something really crazy happens.
Because it could happen. Yeah, I mean, that's the legacy of Leicester legacy.
Yeah.
Leicester-y.
The Leicester clause is going to have
it's what it's going to be. Yeah. The Leicester City clause.
And of course, there'll be the Leicester City odds as well, set by bookies as a consequence of this, although I'm sure that they'll profit because lots of people
everyone would be betting 5,000 to 1
on Stoke to win or Palace to win. Or
it's almost like they've struck just at the right time because they've hit top spot or won the Premier League just when all of the money's starting to flow right in.
Yeah.
And it could well be that this may not be a flash in the pan for Leicester. It could be that Leicester, you know, it might be a bit premature saying this, but that Leicester have joined the big boys. Because there's a lot of money flowing in, and they're going to have to, you know, that they would take a massive amount of fiscal mismanagement to get it wrong, which is entirely possible.
Any established Premier League club now can buy pretty much who they want. I mean, you know, the Premier League clubs will be able to compete with clubs like Borussia Dortmund for players.
Yeah.
Because the money, the TV money that they've got now, so much higher than what they're getting in for the TV money, say, for Bundesliga, that they'll be able to compete. They'll be able to compete with some big clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about, so we'll be interested to see what Leicester do next season in terms of, you know, summer, Champions League. Will they spend more and improve their squad, or what will they do?
Well, Ranieri said he doesn't want to buy any superstars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why would he?
It's working for him so far. Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Why upset that dressing room chemistry? Keep it going for as long as you can.
Absolutely. But he's going to have to expand that squad if he wants to be able to avoid... I mean, what Liverpool did a few seasons ago, and they finished second, and then they had looked like they were going to crack on, and then they had a terrible season because they had a lot more games to play.
Well, they lost Suarez, didn't they?
There is that as well.
What we do know as well is that we can't rely on any hackneyed narratives about what's going to happen next season, because we were falling back on these hackneyed narratives all the way through this season, saying this week they'll lose, it'll be over.
Mm. Yeah.
And every week it happened, and it didn't, and they won, and they won. They won in their kitchen. They won They won the league in Jamie Vardy's kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they didn't. I mean, when Manchester City spent a heap of cash. A heap of cash. They had stretch limos full of cash going all the way into the training ground. And when they finally got round to winning the league, they did it in the very last second of the league.
Yeah.
When they finally managed to do it.
Yeah.
Leicester did it in one season, effectively, you know, and they ended up celebrating it in Jamie Vardy's kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting the way that they're beautiful kitchen. It's interesting to see the way that Ranieri approached all this all the way in, because whenever he met that, when's this going to drop off then, or are you going to win the league then? He just refused to discuss it. We're just concentrating on staying up.
But
he was saying for most of it.
They didn't plan to win the league, did they? They didn't start the season saying we're going to win the league. They started the season saying we're going to stay up. That's our goal. We're going to stay up.
Yeah.
So their approach is win the next game.
Yeah.
Yeah? Just win the next game. Don't worry about how many games you're going to win. Don't worry about who you're going to play and all of that. Yeah. Don't strategize and that. Just think, we're going to win the next game.
No. Yeah.
And they did. And then they did. And then they did. Until they ended up winning all the games.
Yes. Almost,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and
even their bad patch wasn't a bad patch.
No. They didn't stumble.
They just started winning 1-0.
They had a period. I think they went three games without a win over Christmas. I think it was when they lost against Liverpool. And they had a couple of draws, but they still were picking up points.
Yeah,
they still had a couple of draws there around there, and then they started winning again. Even when Arsenal beat them 5-2 at their place, when you sort of think, well, that's your start of the season, right? Now you've been spanked at home, that 5-2 that flattered Arsenal. That really
did.
It could have been. Well, Arsenal could easily have been 3-2 down at half time.
That
game. Yeah. If 50-50 decisions had gone other way.
Okay.
But the wheels didn't fall off then because they thought, well, that's just one game. We'll just go ahead. We'll go on to the next one. Yeah. And we'll win it this time.
So approach and mentality.
Yeah.
All of these things that you have to go. This is all stuff that people will have to look at. And try and figure out what they can pick the bones out of and incorporate into their own way.
Yeah,
you know, they may have rewritten a few rules about how to win stuff.
Yeah.
I ideally hope is that there's been people on the inside who have been able to chronicle this.
Yeah.
And although obviously it would give their opponents a disadvantage, but I think that there would be tremendous interest in finding out, getting really forensic and detailed about what they did and how it helped. I would imagine that there'll be an awful lot of consultation going on.
Well, there will be. I mean, look at the interest around British cycling when Dave Brailsford achieved all those things. I mean, that was picked right apart in a lot of publications. Mm.
Sexist British cycling.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Sexism in British cycling. Yeah, yes. Indeed. Yeah.
But, yeah. But at its peak, it was very interesting to look at the science behind it. I don't just mean the medicine, but, changing a player's pillow. Increased their happiness by X% and that helped an extra second and marginal gain.
Marginal gains.
Very interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Add them all together and you've got something, haven't you?
Yes, and you've got Leicester City winning the title, it seems. Fantastic. Yes. Good for them. And I still don't like them.
But of course, it doesn't really matter what happens to them next season now, does it? Because no one's going to take this away from them.
No one can take it away.
No, they can't take that away.
Yeah, it is great. And good luck to them next season in the Champions League. Fresh challenges, extra games.
Yes.
It's going to be fantastic.
So you're playing Bayern Munich in the final tomorrow, Mr. Varanieri. So any predictions? Think you're going to win it? We just wanted to get out of the group stages and, it's just another game for us.
Just another game.
We'll just have to see how it goes. We're not putting any pressure on ourselves.
His Ranieri accent is alarming. It's almost like he's in the room.
I shut my eyes. Did you? I was right there.
You were right there.
you don't know where he is.
And on that mysterious point, I think it's time to bring this podcast to a close. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Terry DeFellin, and from Jan Dolan, it's goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Goodbye.
What?
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
A Star Trek podcast?
Yeah.
Mate, I'd love to do a Star Trek
podcast. Yeah, we'll do one.
Shall we do one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Shall we call it The Sound of Star Trek?
Yeah.
We should totally call it that, even though someone else has probably had it. Actually, do you know what? I don't think they have. Not that I've not looked into these things, but I've wanted to do a Star Trek podcast for a very long time. And there's so many about. I mean, you think there's a lot of football podcasts. My God, there's an awful lot of Star Trek podcasts out there. But I've got some seriously sharp Star Trek opinions. Sorry, we should start. I apologise.
We could just do it now. Should we just do it now? Let's just do one.
I've got 2 minutes.
We've already got the fucking cold open for the first episode. Already here.